Celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves, Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
Did you know that Utah's off-highway vehicle and personal watercraft youth education programs, required by law, are now online at www.stateparks.utah.gov? All youth must carry this certification while operating on Utah's waters or public lands. OHV education is required for youth aged to 15, and PWC education is required for youth aged 12 to 17.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks, where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round, with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks, in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
Faster Utah empowers teachers, administrators, and other school staff to defend themselves in case of a school shooting. We teach advanced firearms and trauma first aid skills. Graduates of the Faster program pass the same post-qualification shoot as Utah law enforcement. For more information and find out how you can help, go to fasterutah.org.
No matter what's bugging you this summer in your garden, the USU Extension Service Integrated Pest Management Program can help you find solutions. From free fact sheets and books to seminars and updated pest advisories, this website will point you in the right direction. To find these and other free resources, stop at extension.usu.edu/pests.
Put on your helmet, let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE. Summer has officially begun, and Sportsman's Warehouse has everything you need for your next outdoor adventure. From hiking to camping to shooting, ready for some fishing? Sportsman's Warehouse has all the rods, reels, baits, and nets you need for success. And hunting season will be here before you know it, so bring in your bows for free tune-ups. The best part of all is that at Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find knowledgeable people who are passionate about what they do, and they will get you just what you need. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
Play safe, play sober. BUI is boating under the influence. It is illegal to operate a motorboat while under the influence of alcohol. And in Utah, BUI penalties are the same as DUI. It will cost you money and may cost you your life. Play safe, play sober. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Grover joins us once again with Utah's best gardening, enjoying the heat, I guess. Thanks for taking time with us.
Yeah, did you have to mention the heat already? I came back from visiting my mom down in St. George yesterday, and it actually feels cool up here. It was really brutally hot down there. Did you have to bring it up? I mean, come on.
Well, it's been so much in the news every day. I mean, almost every day seems like it's over 100.
Last time we had anything close to this kind of pattern, it actually cooled off in August.
Well, we're right there.
Now, the problem is that just because this weather pattern is sort of similar, sorry, I said sort of, doesn't mean it's going to follow the same pattern because it's not hard and fast. Weather's just a prima donna, let's just face it. That's what it is.
It does what it wants to, when it wants to.
Yeah, I'm afraid you might be right. I'm hoping you're wrong, but you've probably got a better chance of being right than my hopes. But when we're looking at it from a garden perspective, that puts us in a difficult situation because it's hot. It's really hot, and it's really dry, and those things are hitting us together. The drought wouldn't be nearly so bad if we'd stay 89 degrees or lower, but we've got this heat, and so we're trying to keep our lawns alive. Good luck. And then our veggies are stressed because they're hot. Although I did notice I've got a tomato that's almost ripe out there. I don't know how. I had the weirdest looking tomatoes this year for the plants. They are leggy as all get out. I've never had leggy tomatoes before. And so we're paying for that heat, and we're paying with water. And that's difficult. Everyone's talked about it. We all know it. I'm not going to tell you what you should or shouldn't do, but I can tell you what's going to happen with some of these things. One of the big concerns that people have is their lawn. And I think it's important for us to remember that bluegrass and fescue and rye are all cool season grasses. That means they grow when it's cooler. We're talking 65 to about maybe 80, 85 degrees is going to be the optimum range for turf grass overall. That's not an exact number by any stretch. That's kind of the range. And so when you get above 90, the grass is going, that's it, guys. I'm done for the year. Let me know when it cools down, and I'll give you some growth. So it's very normal, unless we're manipulating the grass, for grass that we use for lawns in Utah, to just go brown during the summer or yellow during the summer. Perfectly natural, normal thing to do. It's not killing your turf. What kills it is when it gets zero water during that period of time, which I wish we could give them zero water and still have it survive, but it does need some water. But we can cut back on water, and we can encourage the dormancy. It's not dead grass, it's dormant grass. So when it cools off and we get down back below 85-ish, it's going to start growing again. And you'll see it green up in the fall, and we'll need much, much less water for that time period than we would use right now trying to keep it green and temperatures that it is just not very well suited for. So it is perfectly safe for your grass to go dormant. Now, the other thing that people are worried about is, oh no, the top of my grass is brown and there's going to be all sorts of bad things that happen because it's brown. It's going to have a bunch of weeds show up. It's going to turn into like a dust bowl and I'm going to have like dirt blowing through my house or whatever. Now, this is going to depend. If you have maintained your lawn well and you've watered it deep and infrequently, and if you've mulch mowed, and if you fertilize right, which is to say not too much and not too little, but mowing high, that's one of the real keys on this one. Maybe one of the most important factors. If you've mowed high and you have all these other factors in place, then you're going to have a thick, yellow lawn that is going to shade out the weed seeds that could sprout. Now, this is not that it's going to 100% get rid of the weeds, but it's going to prevent a lot of them. And if you've done good weed care on it, then you won't have a lot of the nasty perennials like field bindweed that are going to pop up through that yellow lawn. And I know this because during the recession, I mowed foreclosed lawns that received zero water and quite often didn't even have good care before the foreclosure. And I watched those lawns. And as long as I could prevent the lawns that were brown from getting worn down, then I could cut down the number of weeds. So counterintuitively, even though I was being paid to mow the lawn, they would get more value if I, in fact, did not mow the lawn through July and August. Because by mowing it, I would crush all that brown-green stuff, and then I have more weeds come up, and then I have to do more work, and then it'll even look crappier than it did in these lawns. These lawns received no water, so they were dead by the end of the summer. That matters because if you mow high and you've got reasonable care on your lawn, yes, you'll get some field bindweed. Yes, if you have any perennial plants that you didn't take care of, those will become a problem. When that happened, I would take out the weed whacker and I would carefully walk through the area and just skim the top so I wasn't running the lawnmower on the grass and destroying my weed protection. So you don't necessarily have to have a weedy lawn. If you take care of it and if you don't overdo it, you will do just fine with that. And so, again, it won't turn into a dust bowl unless you got your kids out there playing soccer or unless you're walking on a lawn. Or unless you're mowing all the brown areas, which really does crush those blades, you won't have a dust bowl. Now, even in my lawn, which is extremely thin, I just got my walnut tree taken out finally this year, and everything under there was pretty thin. And then with the lack of water this year, I've never watered that part of my lawn. That will not come back because I haven't watered it. And the tops are thin, but I kept them mowed long, and they're just not creating a problem because I'm not walking on them. I'm not running the lawnmower over them now that they're brown. I'm just leaving them be, and if I need to do anything with weeds, I do the minimum I can as far as mechanical removal, or I could spray it, although that is going to be rough on any green on a stressed lawn. With this heat, you can't spray anything anyway, not at least a lawn weed killer. And you'll be okay. And if you think about it, our love of bluegrass in Utah is strong, but bluegrass really didn't make it as much of a lawn until we had enough leisure time to even worry about having a lawn. Back when my great-grandparents were alive, if you had a lawn, it's probably because you had sheep mowing it for you. You weren't out there growing a lawn. That came in my grandfather's era as America reached the post-war prosperity after World War I. People had leisure time and they had space and had all these things. It's like, oh, now we could put grass in the 20s and 30s. And before that, you might have had grass, but it was very utilitarian. It was not refined bluegrass. It was whatever was growing and whatever weedy mess you had that somehow got trimmed down, whether you took a scythe out there and trimmed it so your wife could not get her skirt caught, or whether you had sheep or cows, that's how you would have maintained it. Back east, they might have done things differently, but out here in the West, it was frontier country until really the turn of the century, even a little bit later. We didn't have the money or ability to do that for the most part. I suppose some of the rich homes might have, and I only need to do some research, but so really what we look at our lawns is it's still a rather new practice out here, and it's really kind of weird, actually.
Bluegrass, like you say, is probably the king. What everyone likes is the gold standard. As I was growing up, we had a lot of orchard grass or a lot of native grasses that we would water once every 2 weeks, mow it once a week or so, and it was looking good. The roots were deep. It would stay mostly green most of the season, except for the biggest heat of the season. It wasn't quite as intense on maintenance as some of the other grasses that we have.
A lot of the grasses that you would have had out there, I never took a good close look at your lawn. Of course, I didn't take a good close look at my lawn either. But a lot of the grasses you would have had would have been the fescue, would have been the weedy grasses that now we're so desperate to get rid of. And it's like, well, some of these actually make some good sense to them, and they can be really tough. And that brings up something I wanted to talk about. And Utah doesn't have a good native turf grass. By turf grass, I mean something that will establish a nice flat surface from the way it sprouts from the roots. But we have some grasses from out in the Midwest that do really well. And one of those that's really significant is called buffalo grass. And my grandpa, now he was a county ag agent up in Idaho. When he retired, he moved to Provo. And he was in a little tiny lot with his trailer house, lived in a trailer park. And he decided he was going to put in buffalo grass. And that was half his lawn until literally the day he died and beyond, actually. It probably hasn't been redone. I need to go there and look and see. I think they finally got some bluegrass in there, but that's what he had. Now, the buffalo grass that he had was fairly coarse, but it did the job. My dad absolutely hated mowing it, but it did the job, and it actually requires a lot less water than bluegrass does. Newer varieties are much finer. You can get stuff from plugs from various online vendors that you plant the plugs 12, 18 inches apart, and it's going to take 2-3 years or maybe a little bit more or less, depending on how much you water, for that to fill in. And then you've got a drought-hardy lawn that, as you water it correctly, because you can still overwater anything, it will keep a lower height. It'll need less mowing and a lot less water in general and less frequent watering. Now, there's one problem with this. Other than the fact that it's coarse, the problem is it's only going to be green for 3 to 4 months out of the year. Now, we as Utahns know what a good lawn is, and we know that a good lawn cannot possibly be green for only 3 or 4 months. A good lawn has to be green basically whenever there's not snow on the ground. And because of this, we do not use the buffalo grass because we're just too darn snobby to have anything less than perfection.
But there are options out there that will stay green. I think someone out there is going to be making some big money as soon as they figure out which grasses are going to be more drought tolerant. I know there's some out there already starting to emerge, some of them that are a lot more lean on water needs and a lot more robust than others.
We've been doing this already for decades. If you go out to the Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District, I don't know if they saw this display, but they'll have a display of the bluegrass, then they'll have fescue, and then they'll have buffalo grass, and then they'll have another drought-hardy grass. It's not really a turf forming. It's more of a clump forming. And I think they've got crested wheatgrass. They've got a couple of things. That display has been around for a long, long time. And really, there hasn't been a lot of change in that. We've got some new varieties of bluegrass that are more drought hardy, that are more often recommended, but even those are really not actually terribly new discoveries. I think what we have to accept is that for every week of green that we have on that grass, we have to invest more water into it. And I think it's time for us to take a really look at it and decide, do we want green during the cool season when the bluegrass can dominate? Or do we want green during the heat of the year, which buffalo grass is a warm season grass. It's growing when it's warm, like right now, hot even. And that dichotomy that we can do, because if you grow bluegrass primarily during the cool season and let it go dormant in the summer, you're going to use much, much, much less water. And if you grow bluegrass and it's going to be nice and green during the summer, but during the cool season it's going to be yellow, but it's going to use much, much, much less, plus much, much less more. And that's really what we need to determine, is when we want that green. And being willing to say, I'm not going to try and make this grass grow when it's not optimal, when it's not sensible. I'm going to do the sensible, logical thing and let it go dormant, because that's what it wants to do. That's what it's good at doing. And I think a lot of people are going to be more at peace. There are Facebook groups, and some of them I belong to, that are dedicated to just the most excellent turf. That's these guys' hobbies. And I get that, and that's not necessarily a bad hobby, but it's not necessarily a good hobby for Utah. And so those are things that we're going to have to, as a culture, change if we're going to conserve water the way we need to. Turf grass takes 36 to 42 inches a year. Usually bluegrass is listed at 42. I think if you get some of the more water-hardy varieties, you can go down on that. Fescue probably be, I'm guessing 30 inches a year, maybe, probably closer to 36. Rye is probably going to be up there with bluegrass. Buffalo grass, we're talking, and this is during the growing season, by the way. Buffalo grass, over those 4 months, it's about 16. You can probably go down to about 26 inches, maybe. It's not sitting right in front of me. I didn't check this before the program. And buffalo grass is great because you can water it like every 2 weeks to get the right variety. You can mow it every 2 weeks. And it's just nice low maintenance as long as you don't want it green the whole season long. And I think it's time for us to look at that and say, do I want to do this? Is this going to be a better value? But I'll warn you, buffalo grass is rough on your mowing blade. You will spend more time or more money getting blades sharpened or replaced.
At least of what I've seen anyway, a lot of turf grasses are blends of grasses. I know for sure Scott's is. I looked at their things, and they've got a drought-tolerant blend. As I understand it, some of them will be dominating during the cooler season, and some dominate during the hot season. And cooler ones will go dormant in the summer, and they'll come back again in the fall.
Turf mixtures are not uncommon. Most of your sports turf is going to be combination of bluegrass, fescue, and rye. Each of those have certain factors that they bring to a sports field for durability and for recoverability that are significant, particularly in something like football or soccer that's really brutal on the turf. You're going to have your bluegrass because it fills in quickly. You're going to have a turf-type fescue because it takes a lot of abuse, as does the rye, but rye and fescue don't fill in very well. So that's where a lot of the basis of these mixtures come from, is they're remarketing what their sports turf is because it's just really durable. And again, rye does use less water, not a huge amount less, but it does use less water. It's something to think about. I mean, I've seen this coming for decades. I know the droughts are going to happen. You and I both remember the one in 76, and that's the first drought that we would have remembered. And I've been playing this game for long enough that I just think it's time that we cut back on the amount of turf that we have. Now, I didn't say get rid of it all. I will say that on occasion, but I know that's not realistic. People are not ready to give up the turf, and I get that. It's a beloved tradition, which I don't get, but it's a beloved tradition. I accept that. And so people are going to want it. But we can do so much by just having less turf and focus our energy on getting that well taken care of, getting our watering system right. Then we can plant other things around the edges that will make that turf look even better. And that's basically what I described as the Localscapes program. And their primary water savings are just getting rid of some of the turf, not all of it, some of the turf, and then watering everything else appropriately, because it's a lot easier to save water using drip than any kind of aerial sprays. This heat is going to stress bluegrass. It is not going to be happy. This is normally the season where we get a lot of our turf-munching bugs, because the lawn's stressed out. It can't resist the grubs and the moth larvae and everything else that we get. It's just too much for it. And as the weather cools off, those bugs will disappear and your lawn recovers from those bugs. Most of the time, there are exceptions, but I generally think there's something else going on that the lawn owner is not willing to disclose that caused really, really bad problems. But yeah, so just accept that this is really a tough time on turf, even in a normal year. And now we're just seeing the results of what is normally happening to the turf. And again, if you get minimal water on it, half an inch is all it takes, it's going to get enough to recover what it needs to in the fall. When it starts cooling down in September, you'll be fine.
Let's take a quick break. Be back in a few minutes. We're visiting with Mr. Alex Grover with Utah's Best Gardening. When we return, we'll share some tips on seeding that lawn or overseeding that lawn in the fall time. Stick around. More fun is on the way here on Western Life Radio. Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks, where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round, with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks, in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
When carrying a firearm, always treat it as if it were loaded. Always keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to fire. Never let your muzzle point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And always be sure of your target, its environment, and any other safety hazards. This announcement's been brought to you by TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Summer has officially begun, and Sportsman's Warehouse has everything you need for your next outdoor adventure. From hiking to camping to shooting, ready for some fishing? Sportsman's Warehouse has all the rods, reels, baits, and nets you need for success. And hunting season will be here before you know it, so bring in your bows for free tune-ups. The best part of all is that at Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find knowledgeable people who are passionate about what they do, and they will get you just what you need. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
Did you know that Utah's off-highway vehicle and personal watercraft youth education programs required by law are now online at www.stateparks.utah.gov? All youth must carry this certification while operating on Utah's waters or public lands. OHV education is required for youth aged to 15, and PWC education is required for youth aged 12 to 17.
Let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
matter what's bugging you this summer in your garden, the USU Extension Service Integrated Pest Management Program can help you find solutions. From free fact sheets and books to seminars and updated pest advisories, this website will point you in the right direction. To find these and other free resources, stop at extension.usu.edu/pests.
Hey, this is Nick Gillespie with Utah State University Extension Integrated Pest Management Program. Let's talk about squash bugs. Squash bugs have a lot of hosts, like winter squash, summer squash, and melon. Basically, anything in the cucurbitate family. Now, squash bug adults are flat and brown to a gray color, and they have these orange and brown bands along the margins of their abdomen. The eggs are a shiny bronze to red color, and you can find those on the undersides of the leaves. Nymphs develop through several different instars, and they'll start off as a bright green, but they'll eventually turn to gray and brown and start to resemble the adults as they mature. Now, adults and nymphs, they feed with these piercing, sucking, straw-like mouthparts that will suck out the xylem and phloem from our squash plants, which causes them to wilt. Squash bugs have one generation per year here in Utah, but there could be a potential partial second generation in southern Utah. They overwinter as adults in protected sites along the buildings and underneath plant debris or compost pile. They are more of a concern when our squash plants start to develop runners through the harvest. Monitor for squash bugs in the spring when the adults are under the plant debris, perennial plants, or near buildings. Look daily for eggs underneath the leaves, and then consider planting late in the spring or early summer. Watch for that plant wilt, and then remember that the adults and nymphs like to congregate on the lower parts of the plant. Squash bugs are common in cucurbitates, especially our pumpkins and squash, and they'll occur every year. And they can be difficult to control when the populations are allowed to build. To manage, consider rotating crops annually with a non-cucurbit crop. Remove or till plant debris at the end of the season to keep fields free of trash or wood. Place wooden boards between the susceptible plants and then lift them up each morning to destroy the aggregated adults and existing eggs. Again, when you're scouting, look for those eggs and remove them with duct tape. Consider covering your young squash plants with a row cover to physically exclude the squash bugs, but remember to eventually remove that row cover to allow for pollination. If populations become really bad, consider using insecticides with active ingredients like pyrethrins, zetacyclopyrins, and permethrins. Remember, there are some look-alike insects like the brown marmorated stink bug, other brown stink bugs, kissing bugs, and the leaf-footed bugs. If you want to learn more about squash bugs and other pests, be sure to visit our website, extension.usu.edu/pests.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Welcome back to Western Life Radio. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff, host of this program. We have Mr. Alex Grover with us with Utah's Best Gardening. Now, as we approach fall, we're not too far away to overseed a lawn. Let's say we've been unhappy with the lawn that we've got. Maybe we want to get a more drought-tolerant variety. How do you go about overseeding, getting another variety to take over during those warmer months?
First of all, you have to decide whether you're going to overseed with buffalo grass or with a more standard cool season grass. This cool season grasses, again, are bluegrass, fescue, and rye. Rye is going to hate the heat more than bluegrass does, by the way. But the fescue is actually a nice middle ground. It is going to be coarser, but a good turfgrass fescue, a good one, I don't know who sells all the best ones right now, is going to be actually not too unlike your bluegrass these days. They've done a lot of breeding to get it a lot finer and a lot more comfortable to work with, so it's not as coarse. Now, for those that are in the know, when Thanksgiving Point was built, their original turf out in the parking lot was all fescue. There wasn't any bluegrass in it. And so this is 20 years ago-ish.
I don't know if they've got any of that parking even left or if they've redone it all at this point. I don't recognize the place from 20 years ago, so everything's changed. But, yeah, so that was their call, is to put fescue. Now, as they put in other parts of the garden, they did put in bluegrass. But we're looking back. Like I said, we knew this 20 years ago. We knew this 30, 40, 50 years ago. But certainly 20 years ago, we had the resources. Buffalo grass was available then, not too much less than it is now, but people just don't use it enough. Go to Localscapes, it's one word, Google it, and look at how they design things, and they will give you classes for either cheap or very low. I know once the pandemic started, they dropped all the fees on all their classes. I do not know if that's still the case. But that is the way to get the bluegrass that you want, give that nice turf you want, and then get something else that's more appropriate to our climate and is just not going to take the same amount of water. And to me, that's the optimal, is to find an adequate compromise. And I really encourage people to go look it up, take some classes. Really, what they do is, rather than drive into your water conservation, it's like, hey, listen, here's design principles that all of us that were in landscape architecture or horticulture learned in our design classes, and we're going to make them so they're easy to understand for a homeowner, that they're applicable for a homeowner, and then they can use those to make something that's a whole heck of a lot nicer than what we've been doing in the past. And let me tell you, a good Localscapes yard looks a whole heck of a lot better than wall-to-wall turf. It just does. Even to the people who really love turf, it's a plus-up to have a good Localscapes-type design.
We've talked about this before, year after year. You want to have a variety of plants. You want to have a variety of different things. Otherwise, that monoculture will be a big target.
Yes, and that's just a biological truth. When you got a lot of the same thing hanging out in a lot of the same place, you're going to get a lot of predators or diseases. And that is just been proven time and time and time again. If you do Localscapes right, you cut down on your chance of that. You're going to cut down on the chance that you get lawn pests, because you have less lawn, and if your neighbors do it, you can conceivably really get rid of a lot of problems.
And again, it's a little early right now to be planting a new lawn or overseeding or doing anything until about September.
Yeah.
But it's a good time now to start planning ahead.
Assuming you're using a cool season grass, you're going to look at September to maybe early October to lay it down. You get too much later than that, and it's not going to have time to root down before the winter hits. That's not inherently bad, but it does mean that a lot of critters are going to be eating your seed before it can sprout in the spring. But some of the healthiest lawns I've seen have been seeded in the fall, and that's really a good time to do it. And if it starts looking like we're going to start getting some storm cycles, you could also do it with relatively little water on your own during that time period. Because, yes, it needs to be wet, but it just needs to be wet on top. And if we get a couple of weeks of rain like we used to back in the day, you may not have to add much water, if any. But if you are adding water, it's not as hot, so that water is going to go further. And I think that's an important thing for us to think about in water conservation, is not, what do I have to suffer to get this done? Although this year may be a year that we have to do that. A lot of it is, how can I make what I've got go a little bit further? Or how can I make things go a little bit further so I don't have to use as much? And I think those are important things.
I was just curious on the Scotts brand of seed. And I did a little research while you were talking. And they do have heat-tolerant blue is what they call it. And it is a tall fescue. Deep-rooted, and it does tolerate the drought a lot easier than the other ones. So it is exactly what you were saying.
I think they're getting better. They have done plant breeding, but they're also getting better at marketing it. And once you get some of these nicer fescues, for your standard homeowner, you're not going to necessarily notice the quality difference, but they will be drought-hardier, and they will handle the heat better. And we've got this preconceived notion of what we want for lawns, and that comes down to, I've got to have this variety. Of course, I will say that a lot of the turf companies that do sod are mixing their seed and they're adding fescues in to help with the water resilience and the heat resilience to the bluegrass. I don't want to mention any names on this because there's probably names I should mention, but I don't know everyone that does what. I haven't bud sawed in a lot of years, so I haven't researched it in a lot of years. But there are a lot of options out there, and when you buy sod, you should be asking, what seed is used in this? Is it going to be drought-resistant, or is this going to be a standard bluegrass? And watch out, because they're going to want to tell you what you want to hear so they can sell you stuff. And to make sure that you're able to track down things on your own, you know, if they can give you a named variety of grass, that's great, because then you can research that grass. If they give you a type of grass, you know, research it and make sure it's actually legit and not just something that they stuck a name on. I mean, it's so funny because I've been seeing over the last few years so many trademarked terms that have no meaning. They stick it on there, and it's like, this is just our brand. But there's no value as to this is the process, this is the product. So be very careful of that. There's a fertilizer company, and they sell fertilizer, and they've got it branded, the trademark, what they call it, but it means nothing because there is no definition for it. This is how we're going to make it look like we're doing something special with our fertilizer. And what it's referring to, when they first started using it, was with a controlled-release fertilizer that very effectively spreads out the release of the fertilizer. And when that got too expensive, they just kept the name and changed the fertilizer to a cheaper thing. You really got to check and make sure that it means something, that you're getting what it actually is said to mean. It's really funny that way. This is a major name brand. I can't come out on the radio and say it without getting us into trouble. Be very aware that not everything is what you think it is.
It takes a little time to find out that information and get it done right. There's a lot of marketing mumbo-jumbo sometimes you got to weed through. Now, I know you're working in the heat every day. I'm sure you got some tips and tricks for folks out there that are trying to get things done and not end up with heat exhaustion. You got to have some ideas as to how people can be more resilient in dealing with this heat out there.
Move to Alaska.
Even there was bad.
Yeah. The first thing is drink a lot of water. Now, this is to the point of being cliche, but the thing is, it's true. You can get some value from sweet sugary drinks, but you're going to get a lot of value with less complications from just water. I realize that some people struggle with drinking just water. I know my wife, actually hard for her to drink it because of some complication with the cancer treatments changed her perceptions. And so it's just not the same for her as it is for, say, me. But drink lots of water. If you cannot drink just a straight water, get something that will add some flavor but will not add a lot of calories or a lot of too harsh chemicals. I know when I get to that point, which is not very often, I'd rather add a little bit of lemon juice to add the flavoring so it goes down easier. Another thing I'm going to say is don't drink water that's extremely cold. Today, I filled up my jug, and I usually put enough ice in to get the water below lukewarm, but not icy. I don't like icy water. It's harder to drink in abundance. You tend to sip icy water, whereas I tend to chug stuff that's chilled but not cold. There's not really a word for lukewarm water. And that's just easier for your system to absorb. It's easier on your stomach. It's easier to drink a lot of water. But it is important. And when I'm out there, I do eight-hour days, but after you cut everything down, on a busy day, I'm out 6 to 6.5 hours because you've got your mandatory breaks, you've got safety meetings and all this stuff. You got times where you're setting up and getting your equipment gathered and put away and stuff. So I don't work 8-hour days in reality in the heat, but I have a lot of water available. I take a gallon jug, and I don't want to go back and forth and think, well, I'm almost out of water. I need to conserve some. I want to drink a lot of water. The other thing, too, is you need to monitor how that water is affecting you. And we're all adults here. You need to check the color of your pee. It should not be dark yellow. It should not be luminous yellow. It should be no darker than a lemonade. It shouldn't be any darker than a medium-colored lemonade. If it is, you need to get more water in. You need to be peeing a lot. I've got a coworker, and she doesn't want to drink a lot because she doesn't want to run to the bathroom a lot. Well, you need to run to the bathroom a lot, because if you're not running to the bathroom a lot, you are having mineral buildup in your urine, and that's not going to be good for you. That's one of the reasons you need to drink a lot. It's not just overheating, but it's not being able to flush things out properly. So your urine should be light or even clear. Clear is even better. Now, as I say this, you've also got to be aware that with all this extra water you're taking in, you're going to sweat out more salt, and you're probably going to pee out some as well. So I have to watch out for this. I've never gone down for heat exhaustion, heat stroke, or anything like that, but I've gotten sick from not having enough salt. One thing that the Army taught us really well is salt to taste. Don't take extra salt. Don't take salt tablets. Salt to taste. And for me, there are a lot of times I cannot taste salt when I add it. You know what that means?
What does it mean?
I'm short on salt. I cannot taste a change in my food. That's not good. And I have to add more salt. I'm extreme on that, I think. I don't think there are a lot of people like me. But it does give you a reality check when you're in the summer when I eat ramen and I cannot taste the salt in the ramen. I get so low on salt, I have to add salt to an extremely salty food. Again, that's not normal, but be aware of how things taste, and you may need to add extra salt or eat salt to your foods. Of course, don't do that unless you're drinking lots of water. But drink lots of water, carry it in a big container so you don't feel like you're limited. I hate Camelbacks because it is so hard for me to get enough water out quick enough. I just struggle to use them. I'm always fighting to get the water out, and I'm like, just give me the water. I don't bother with one of those, even though the Army issued them. For me, it was a very difficult way for me to get hydrated. Just couldn't get enough water. So get a big container. If you're going out there for an hour, you don't need a gallon container. But if you're looking at long days of work, you get a gallon container. Be ready to fill it a couple times, and you'll have time to fill it because you're going to be going in there and peeing a lot, because you need to do that to keep things flushed and keep your system working properly. Those are really so important. And again, don't be afraid of peeing. Don't be afraid of loss of productivity. Taking some time to pee is a lot more productive than having heat exhaustion or heat stroke. You're not going to be productive under those conditions. I can promise you, I've seen it happen. Nobody is ever productive when they're going into heat exhaustion.
That's exactly right. Also, working those early hours or late hours, trying to avoid the middle part of the day.
That's one that doesn't bother me as much. Now, if I live down in St. George, I just came up from a weekend stay with my mom down there, and that's brutal down there. That's brutal. For Utah County and Salt Lake County, where I've lived and worked for most of my life, it's not a big thing for me, but I'm used to it and my body is adapted to it. Not everyone's body adapts to it. Early on, when we started hitting those really hot temperatures in June, the big boss called us in and says, hey, I'm worried about you guys. I want you to come in earlier in the day. And he wanted to see our opinions. No, it doesn't bother me, but I also knew that my coworker does struggle a lot more with heat. And even though I didn't need to do it personally, and I know this because I do it all the time, for her sake, I didn't argue it or anything. I just gave my opinion and says, okay, we'll do what you want. We'll come in earlier. Because it's not just keeping me safe, it's keeping my team safe. And that's really important, that you're taking care of your team as well as yourself. And so we come in at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm still struggling every day when I leave work at 1:30 because I feel like it's 1:30, it's too early to leave. I couldn't possibly have done all the work. I must be screwing up on my time. And I go through that every day, as I feel like I'm not working a full day because I'm leaving so darn early, even though I am. I'm working plenty. But it keeps my team safe. And that is well worth it, to keep my team safe coming in early.
what's bugging you this summer in your garden, the USU Extension Service Integrated Pest Management Program can help you find solutions. From free fact sheets and books to seminars and updated pest advisories, this website will point you in the right direction. To find these and other free resources, stop at extension.usu.edu/pests.
I'm Governor Spencer Cox. We live in an incredible state, and this time of year, my family and I, we love to ride. Unfortunately, we've had too many fatalities this year, and while safety equipment is critical, it's not enough. Remember to always be aware of your surroundings and never ride beyond your capabilities. We want to make sure that you make it home safe. And never forget, nobody is invincible.
Summer has officially begun, and Sportsman's Warehouse has everything you need for your next outdoor adventure. From hiking to camping to shooting, ready for some fishing? Sportsman's Warehouse has all the rods, reels, baits, and nets you need for success. And hunting season will be here before you know it, so bring in your bows for free tune-ups. The best part of all is that at Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find knowledgeable people who are passionate about what they do, and they will get you just what you need. Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
Our region is facing an exceptional drought, and the potential for wildfire is high.
And agencies around the state are working together to meet the threat.
Wildfire could strike in your community next. Are you prepared? Plan ahead now by remembering, ready, set, go. Be ready by maintaining 100 feet of defensible space around your home and taking steps to harden your home and make it more fire resistant.
Be set by having a wildfire action plan and knowing what important items to take with you in the event of an evacuation.
And lastly, go. Evacuate early when a wildfire strikes in your area.
We're prepared.
We're prepared.
We're prepared for wildfire. Are you?
Faster Utah is proactive about school safety. For more information, fasterutah.org.
Y'all might think that a day on the lake is all fun and the sun on your bum, but you, my friends, are incorrect. Today we're gonna feel the burn together while Roar gets you ready for a safe day on the lake. Not only do life jackets save your lives, but they make you look amazing. Let's get started. This first routine is an important one. You gotta zip it, gotta zip it, gotta click it, zip it, click it. Looking good, Terry.
Oh yeah, guys got it.
Fly down the boat. Wave to the boat. Scream for help. Ah! What's wrong, Terry?
I just can't swim good.
Oh, that's okay, little buddy. That's what this is for.
Oh.
Woo. Thanks to my exercise, I think you're ready for a safe day on the lake. Just remember, always wear your life jacket.
When carrying a firearm, always treat it as if it were loaded. Always keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to fire. Never let your muzzle point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And always be sure of your target, its environment, and any other safety hazards. This announcement's been brought to you by TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Calling to me, wild and free.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and Western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.